Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We're back, baby, in the Kia studios. And just to wrap up the gear conversation in college football, we're going to do it at 11:40 all week long. John was telling me about the Oregon uniforms where they had the breast cancer awareness pink infused. Mm-hmm. I got a picture up right here, Marcus Mariota. The helmet is dopest. In terms of the silver feathers, it's got a pink O, and then pink name and numbers. Mm-hmm. It is off the charts. This is one of the coolest uniforms I've ever seen.
Yeah, I'm surprised more schools don't do stuff like that. Some of them do. I think Cal has done it as well, but there's been a couple of them done it. But they did that, and that's why I said Oregon was the innovators to the funky, really cool uniforms. You know, they did it on their side. Then Maryland did the worst version of the funky try-to-be-cool uniform with the Maryland state flag on the helmet that looked completely ridiculous. Theirs was on the bad end. But again, I like Louisville with all the newfangled uniforms that they've done. Obviously love what Oregon's done. But some of the traditional ones, and there's people, you know, when we do the Big Ten, I will tell you right now, I'm a huge fan of the Michigan traditional look. Huge fan.
But it's got
tradition.
Color to it. It's not white in another color. No, I'm serious. It's like Wisconsin. Do you like their uniforms?
No, they're boring.
I guess we'll get to that later on.
Yeah, we will.
Week.
That'll be Thursday. We'll do the Big Ten. Let's get back to
their uniforms suck.
Real talk. How do you like Minnesota's uniforms?
I like the maroon and gold. I actually like their uniforms. Look, if Wisconsin had the coolest uniforms in college football, I would still have to say that they stink. I'm contractually obliged
well,
as a Minnesotan.
That's how I feel with Florida State and Florida. Those colors are horrible. By the way, guys that are texting about USC and UCLA, I love USC's uniforms. I had a really tough time narrowing it down to
me
three.
Too. It's between USC and UCLA. I love them both. I went with the Trojans.
Mine was for USC or Washington. It came down to one of those two.
Apparently, they went with the Trojans in Pyeongchang. Is that how you say it? Where the Olympics is?
Pyeongchang.
Is it Pyeongchang?
Yeah.
I nailed it. I can't believe it on the first try. Pyeongchang.
Did you see the
I've been afraid of saying that word. I just nailed it.
ABC affiliate in LA.
Hey. Oh, close the mic, son.
And we know Preacher Man can get real salty when you jack a Preacher Man story.
At 12:40, there's a great story from the Bible about the Olympics.
Here's what's funny, and this will go behind the show, and we'll get to the Falcons here in just a second. When we do our meetings in the morning, and we've got, you know, 4 pages of paper, each segment written out what we're going to do. There's a lot of empty space for, you know, am I allowed to say grabassery? I just did. So, yeah, there's a lot of space for grabassery in here. The two segments that never have anything written on them, from the Bible, Paul doesn't tell us what he's doing in From the Bible.
Does not.
Or read between the lines. So there's
it takes away from the reaction.
Well, there's potential that Rick and I will have seen something that falls into one of these two categories. Mark will just let it slide. Hey, you'll still hear that again at 1:40. You steal one of Paul's segments. He may hit you with a steak or an old Chick-fil-A biscuit or something. Like, he is salty as hell if you take one of his stories.
Oh, I'm incredibly lazy. Oh, you want to play it now? Yeah, I'll play the sound clip now, and you'll hear it again at 1:40. I'm not going to go research anything else. Come on now.
See you, too.
I'll see you, too. I'm good. I'm done.
Mark will just put on Disco Biscuits for 15 minutes and let Rick roll.
Hey, yes, let's do
it.
I
like to read between the lines of Rick's reaction to Disco Biscuits, and go.
Well, we have to play that because when we have to go to the bathroom, it takes 20 minutes to go from one floor to the next waiting on an elevator.
We had yesterday, and I promise we'll talk Falcons, one of the ladies that works in the lawyer's office right next to us was getting on the elevator when Paul and I was, apparently to go to the
Was she attractive?
Everybody that works in that lawyer's office is attractive. At least
except
from,
the dudes.
Yeah, the dudes we don't care about. So she gets in the elevator and goes, it'll be nice if we get our bathroom fixed.
For real.
And so Paul and I, and she drops a line, and I don't know if
I'm not even sure you could say that.
I'm not sure if I could repeat it, but I'll try to in the most sensitive way to not anger people. She goes, I've thought about just walking in and using the bathroom while the workers are in there. And there's no toilets in there or anything. And she goes, maybe that'll get them to hurry up. And I looked at her and I go, no, that's going to have them take a hell of a lot longer to fix the bathroom because they're going to hope that you're going to come back.
We should be hearing We should be hearing construction noises in our bathroom. I'm hearing nothing. Not a peep. Every time I look in there, it's like a shell of a bathroom, and there's not a human being in there working on it.
The worst
thing
is there was one guy with a Makita drill who was sitting outside just going, vroom, vroom, vroom. That's all he was doing.
Hey, but here's the good news. We know when Colony Square has a happy hour because we got new flat screens. Now, to take a pee, we have to go up or down a floor. But I can tell you the happy hour special is an establishment, but I can't go to the bathroom on my own floor.
Hey, they're doing a big thing for Fat Tuesday today, which I'm sure everybody's down there enjoying themselves.
I got to take a fat leak here eventually, and I can't do that.
Got a water bottle out there for you if you want to try to fill that up. All right, let's talk some Falcons. We were doing this in the 10 o'clock hour. You guys can chime in, 404-741-0929. We were talking about ways the Falcons can alleviate some cap scenarios, and it had to do with cutting guys, restructuring. Ella texted in on our Solomon Brothers Diamond text line when we were talking about Jake Matthews and the potential of extending his contract. He's going to make $12 million on a fifth-year option this year if they don't come up with a long-term deal for Jake Matthews. And she goes, people that are complaining about Jake Matthews must have forgot about Lamar Holmes. And I almost threw up in my mouth because Lamar Holmes is one of the offensive linemen that I've tried to take from my memory bank and just shove it away.
But you can't delete it. It's in the matrix somewhere.
I need Matt Hardy to come in here, broken Matt Hardy, to delete Lamar Holmes from the memory.
Let's not forget the end of the Sam Baker regime at left tackle.
I'd rather have Sam Baker. Lamar Holmes was out of shape.
Yeah, no, I get you there, but the end of Sam Baker was pretty brutal.
Okay, who was worse? Peter Kahns with his doughy body. Lamar Holmes with the overhang that he had going on. Sam Baker. Sam was actually fairly decent for a few years, and then the body broke down.
I'm going to say Lamar Holmes.
Boy, it's a push between Lamar. And didn't they draft Lamar Holmes the same year they drafted Peter Kahns?
Cannot remember.
I'm almost positive they got those guys in back-to-back rounds. Yuck. Mike Smith up there when they're on Hard Knocks. Hey, guys, we're going to do a body transformation video. look at Peter Kahns last year, not a muscle to be found. Now look at him this year. Still not a muscle to be found, but maybe 1% less fat off the tuchus.
Lamar Holmes, third-round pick in 2012.
Where
was Kahns 2012?
I think Peter Kahns was a second-round pick in 2012.
So keep.
I'm almost positive. So you took those two guys in back-to-back years.
Oh, no.
He was the second-round pick.
He was the second-round pick in 2012. Say it ain't so. TD, Thomas Dimitroff wants to delete those draft picks from his memory.
That is terrible.
Sorry, TD. Not rubbing it in. We're doing such a better job of picking the groceries now, aren't we?
Hold on. Let's add. You want to go down the list of 2012 just to make Falcon fans feel better about what you did a year ago, getting Duke Riley and getting – and I know Duke Riley didn't pan out all that well and getting to Bond. This was the 2012 draft class. Peter Kahns, not in the league. Lamar Holmes, not in the league. Jonathan Massaqua. Yeah, that didn't work out so well. Charles Mitchell, I'm not even sure, made the team that year. And Travion Robertson.
They didn't have a first-round pick?
No, they didn't have a first-round pick.
That was the
Julio trade.
All right. That's a terrible draft.
That's
a terrible draft.
Throw in Brady Ewing, who I liked. He had a lot of injuries.
Fullback?
Yeah, kept him out of the league. Really good dude. There's not a single player, and I know this has been chronicled before, but when somebody brings up the name Lamar Holmes, it takes us down bad memory abyss. That draft, 5 years later, doesn't have a single guy still in the NFL. None of them.
Thomas, again, sorry for bringing it up. We were prompted, though.
We were prodded a little bit,
that
too.
That was the worst draft in Falcons history. It can't get worse than that.
I don't think
you didn't have a first. None of those guys are in the L. 6 years later, nah, that's the worst draft in Falcons history.
That's terrible.
Like, the last three drafts have been
pretty good.
Really good. 2 years ago and 3 years ago, killing it. Last year, I thought they took a step back a little bit. Not as big of a fan of last year's draft. But there is still time with these guys. There's still time for Duke Riley, still time for Casey, and still time for Tech.
Here's one that we'll look at. I go back to Peter Kahns for a moment because a lot of us are saying, hey, get a first-round offensive lineman. And maybe that alleviates you do whatever you're going to do with Andy Levitre. Maybe you cut him. You bring in a first-round guy. Peter Kahns, by almost every magazine and website out there, was listed as the number one center coming out of the draft. Most people thought he would have been gone in the first round. He falls to 55 and just was never very good. They tried him at center. They tried him at guard. Nothing worked out. And that's where the draft a lot of times is not a sure thing. And this is to go to one of the points that you had on Lavitre. If you can remake Lavitre's contract, I feel better with 31-year-old Andy Lavitre potentially than some Hammond Egger or new guy coming out of the draft.
I don't need the unknown. Andy Lavitre is fine. The left side of our offensive line is fine with Mack and Lavitre and Matthews. Is it great? Is it elite? No, it's good. It's top half. I think it's above average. You know what I'm saying? And you still have upside. Not with Mack. I mean, he's a Pro Bowler. He is who he is. And if Mack can play like five more years, and that's a huge if, we may be talking about a Hall of Fame center, ladies and gentlemen. He's that good. But there's still time for Jake Matthews to develop and become a Pro Bowl left tackle. That'd be nice, wouldn't it?
Couple of guys that we didn't talk about, potential cap casualties, and we have in the past, but Levine Toilolo, a guy that's got $10 million on the next 2 years. You cut him,
Time out.
Yeah, yeah.
Does that include this past year?
No.
He's got two more years at five per?
Remember, they signed him 3 years, $12
million. Oh, my God.
And let me pull up
numbers. Bye-bye. See ya.
Gone?
Bye-bye. I'm not looking, and again, I'm not mad at the guy. I'm trying to say this with all due respect, but I do throw a little sauce on my stuff. Sorry. It's who I am. It's who I was born and built to be. Bye-bye.
4.5 is what he's going to make this year, and I'm trying to pull up what he'll make next year. 3.5 is the base salary, $1 million in the signing bonus. He's got $2 million in dead money right now. $9.5 million over the next 2 years for Levine Toilolo.
To block? See ya.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a blocking tight end,
exactly.
And a very good one.
Mm-hmm.
I ain't paying that money for that.
Nope.
I'll pay a road grader, non-skilled tight end, $2 million.
Mm-hmm.
I ain't paying him that.
Yeah, you cut him, you have $2 million in dead cap to pay.
I'll deal with it.
Me
I'll
too.
Make it work.
So there's another guy that could be there.
Mm-hmm.
Take some phone calls, 404-741-0929. Sound off on the Falcons. Are there some guys that you are willing to let loose? We kind of have some salaries in front of us and what they could potentially save. Let's go to Alan in Atlanta on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Hey,
what's up, Alan?
Oh, man, let me, what I would do is, I would tell Arthur Blank to keep his money when it comes to Matt Ryan. You see, and build and draft a backup quarterback. I'm not saying you cut Matt Ryan like that. Just let him stay with the $19 million and draft a backup quarterback. You know, because what name? Lamar Jackson. You know, whoever available. You know, the best quarterback available. Now, a lot of people passed on Watson last year. Okay, now look at what he did. Watson showed out this year. So the people go sleep on Lamar Jackson. He's a, you know, so I wouldn't sleep on him. If he fall down to where I'm drafting at, if I were the owner, I would pick him up because he's a proven, he can throw the ball and he can scramble.
Alan, thank you for the creativity. Thank you for the outside-of-the-box thinking. And we appreciate your call here on the home of the Falcons, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Yeah, if you let Matt play out his contract, it's $21 million this year. $21.65 is what the number I have listed in front of me. And then he'd be a free agent at the end of the year. That's just not that's not how this team does business, Mark. They never have with Dimitroff and Arthur Blank. They do not let guys go into the final year of their contract unless they don't want them back. And we all know that they want Matt Ryan back.
They get out in front on stuff, but if Matt Ryan and his agent Tom Condon are coming at the Falcons, you know, Garoppolo got 137.5 over 5 years. If Matt Ryan wants 170 over five and they're dug in on that, if I'm the Falcons, I say, cool, we're playing this out.
Couple of guys.
So, Johnny, you buying what I'm selling? If Matt Ryan wants to break the bank and completely paint us into a corner financially to the point where we're going to have to say goodbye to Tevin Coleman, Keanu O'Neill, and several other guys when they put their hand out to get paid. At that point, if I'm the Falcons, I'm playing it out. I'm betting on me at that point, not my player.
Boy, that is a dangerous game to play
it
in
sure
a one-year
but guess
one
what?
Year scenario.
But guess what? If you play it out, Ryan kills it, you want him back, and you can't come to terms, you franchise tag him. And then you franchise
then you
tag
pay
him
more,
again.
Then you're paying more money than you would be if you play it out now. And because at least now, okay, say break the bank. And I know we've talked about this, and it's $30 million a year on average. You can still structure it where it doesn't hurt you as bad. You franchise tag, and by then the franchise tag might be $28 million. You're paying every single dime of that year.
But it's only a one-year deal.
But it could be that year where you have to cut guys that year to get that money to work.
I get it, but how many guys are you going to have to cut if we got to pay Matt Ryan $30 to $35 million per year?
When the cap's going up maybe $15 million this year, not as bad as you'd think.
So do we know that?
That the report I saw, it's going up like between $12 and $15 million.
In 1 year?
In 1 year. Well, that makes 167 to 179.
Okay. Let's get to the bottom of that. That makes me feel a lot better.
For the guys that are texting and cut Austin Hooper, while I agree he has not played well, Austin Hooper cost $858,000 this year.
He's a backup tight end in the NFL. That's who he is.
$858,000, yep. I'm okay with.
I'm okay with that.
Hey, we'll take a couple of more calls on this at 404-741-0929. We'll also do an NFL bounce when we get back from the break. Did Roger Goodell tweak the replay system before the Super Bowl? We'll talk about that next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
All right, we're back to work here in the Kia studios. We love Kias. John has two Kias, he and Urania. We have two Kias, a couple of Sorentos. We have, it's probably like some people in the neighborhood, John, probably think it's kind of cheesy. We have his and hers, Kia Sorentos. I got a black one, she's got a white one. And so people are like, oh, isn't that cute? They have his and hers Sorentos. I say, take that, y'all. We love our car.
Yeah, she's got the truck, I've got the car.
She loves the Sorento, right?
Oh, yeah. Except it barely fits in our garage. She's hit the mirror a time or two. So have I.
Ding!
And then she gets mad at me. You hit... we got the little, rubber siding on the garage to kind of seal it. So if you hit that, it just goes... kind of scrapes by. That really hurt anything, but we're not supposed to do this.
At least you don't have Randy McMichael's bush to deal with.
No.
Adjacent to his driveway.
We have very well manicured bush at our house.
Not sure Mark Owens really needed that one.
Well, the HOA,
that one really has kind of sent him over the edge.
The HOA demands it.
How about line of the year from Randy McMichael when he called the HOA lady in his neighborhood a heifer?
Yeah.
He called her a heifer.
My wife's actually on the board because, you know, of course, that's what they... Paul, your wife's on the board too, isn't she?
My wife is on the board, actually.
Is she the board?
She's the board in my house.
There's being on the board and there's being the board.
She's on the board right now. She may turn into the board later on.
See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And you know what? That heifer of HOA getting on my nerves, all right? I'm going to trim the bush, woman, all right?
That line of the year, I'm telling you.
Of HOA, not the HOA heifer. That heifer of HOA.
And you know what?
HOA.
That heifer of HOA.
Line
that should
the
be the name of a tag team, like in the women's division.
So somehow that came up a night or two ago when I was hanging out with Charity. I'm like, you know Randy, the guy that fills in for John a lot? She's like, yeah. I'm like, he had this line, and he called the HOA lady in his neighborhood a heifer, and she started laughing. And that's the Southern way of speaking. And I didn't know that. I didn't know that, like, heifer was a Southern word.
Absolutely.
And she's like, oh, yeah, that's a Southern word. So I did not know that.
Mark, you'll love this. I think Tony Schiavone wants to punch me every now and then. Every time Tony comes in, I get him on random wrestling questions. I'm that guy. Hey, Tony, remember? So I asked him this question. I don't know why this pops in my head when Tony Schiavone walks in. I said, Tony, who's a better tag team, the Nasty Boys or the Public Enemy? And he goes, the Nasty Boys. Go back and watch some of the old... And Tony's giving me a breakdown of the Nasty Boys.
That's awesome.
I've become that guy.
You're better than me. I'll be like, hey, Tony Schiavone, what are you doing, buddy? He'll be like, hey, Mark Owens, go F yourself.
Not Schiavone.
Yeah.
Take a call or two before we get to the NFL bounce, guys. Want to sound off on the Falcons. Chuck's in the ATL. Chuck, what's up, man? How you doing?
Hey, how you doing? How you doing, Rick? First of all, I'd like to say... If you have to decide, what are you trying to do? Strike fast or do a long term? You got two good blueprints out there. You got Belichick, you got Tomlin. You're not going to get any of those guys as coaches. So what you got to do is get your coaching set people in place first. You got to get you an offensive coordinator that's not friend with the head coach, but that knows what he's doing, can spot talent, and can run plays. You got a good defensive coordinator, so you're in place. We all agree that if Matt Ryan goes down, the season is over. So you got a $4 million insurance package sitting over there at Matt Shaw. You take that money and you get you a couple of journeyman players on defense that are hungry, that are working for a contract, and you bring them in 1 or 2 years just like the Patriots do. They never have a big name. They never keep people in time the big contract. Neither do the Steelers. They got a few main pieces that they keep, which we already have our main pieces on offense and a few guys on defense.
Appreciate it. That's actually a pretty good call. Here's the thing. I don't believe you can go the Patriots route. That's just not how the Falcons are set up. the Patriots never would have signed a Julio Jones to a big-name deal, or they never had a Julio Jones. I know they had Randy Moss, but they weren't going to do that. They weren't going to pay Devontae Freeman the money we paid him. So you really can't go the route of the New England Patriots. You could be like the Steelers, because remember, the Steelers typically homegrown talent, pay their own. If you become a pain in the rear end like Mike Wallace, bye-bye. You want to go get 5 for $60, have fun with that.
And the second that your game starts to point, your arrow starts to point down in your career, they say goodbye. That's Belichick and that's the Steelers. Like, so a guy who's 28, John, comes up for a contract. Mm-hmm. And his 26th season, he killed it. His 27th season, he was all right. So he starts to show signs of not being that player. They let you go. That's just their way. Every team has their way. Nobody in the NFL can duplicate what the Patriots have done. And I don't believe it will ever be done. That's why we call Bill Belichick the GOAT. Okay, he's the greatest of all time. Forget about Landry. Forget about earmuffs, John. Jimmy Johnson. Mm-hmm. Forget about all these guys. Forget about Don Shula. Yeah. George Halas.
It's a different
all
day
of
and
these
age
guys.
Of the NFL.
Belichick is the GOAT. Nobody's going to be able to say, hey, they do it like this. Let's just copy them.
Right.
The NBA has been trying to do that with the Spurs for 20 freaking years.
And it
years.
Doesn't work.
A couple of times with a couple of teams it does, but they have superstar players.
I texted in and said, hey, please let the South Florida Yankee know that Kia doesn't even make a truck, let alone a Sorento should never be referred. To me, an SUV is a truck. I call it a truck. I know it's not a pickup truck. I don't need a pickup truck.
Mark Owens?
Is that a truck?
Could we get a vision computer?
Is that a truck to you, Rick?
All right. Charity corrected me on this the other day. And I like to screw around with Charity. I mean, literally and
hey
figuratively.
Now.
But I sometimes go, hey, Charity, I got to run out to the rig real quick and get something. Like I got like a
18-wheeler. Now, you sound like you're 78.
No. Like I got an 18-wheeler out front, right? Yeah, I got to head out to the rig. I
when
forgot.
I show up at the homestead in my rig, me and John Fricky, it's going to be a hootenanny.
So, and I kill her every time with that. She's like, rig, it's not a rig. And then so I call it a truck. She goes, it's not a truck. It's an SUV. And I'm like, what in the heck is the difference?
It's a
truck. It feels like a truck to me. It's got four doors. It's a little bit higher up the ground.
You guys with rifle racks in the back that are going to yell at me, like, Paul's giving me that look like, it's not a truck. It's a truck.
It's not a truck.
What is it?
It's an SUV.
It's a truck.
It's not a truck. A truck has an open bed. An SUV.
I can pop the back open and leave it open.
You know, I got to agree with Preacher Man and Charity. I really do. I do not feel like I'm driving a truck when I drive my Kia Sorento. I feel
all
like
you're
I'm
doing is driving a jacked up car on steroids.
Thank
That's
you.
It.
That's it. I'm totally with Preacher Man.
You're the red.
And by the way, we're not hating. I love my Kia Sorento, but I guess calling it a truck really isn't right.
Mark, you're the redneckest of all of us, and that, I say that with all complimentary meaning. Truck or not a truck?
Yeah, I have an Xterra. I call it a truck all the time.
Doggone right. Yeah. If Mark Owens, the countryest son of a gun that works at this station outside of Bo Morgan, who takes country to a whole nother level. The country is
now,
son
Bo
of a gun
actually drives a truck in his defense.
Bo does drive a truck.
Held together by duct tape and a prayer.
And a lift kit.
Wow. Vision Computer Twitter poll. Is it acceptable to call an SUV a truck? Yes, all good, or no, no way. And by the way, yesterday, our Vision Computer Twitter poll final results. Do you secretly delete your wife or girlfriend's shows off the DVR? Your three options were yes all the time, no she'd kill me, or your final option, she deletes my stuff. You can hear this conversation. We got into this yesterday during the Slice Live. Go check out the conversation on our iTunes page. Search 92.9 The Game. But 53% of the responses coming in saying, yep, I delete my wife's stuff all the time.
Really?
Yeah, you know what those guys are? Anonymous people that voted. Nobody put their name on it because their wives may check.
I was just going to say, and they wouldn't be as bold about that if their wives were.
She might be listening. I secretly delete her stuff, and then I blame it on, like, I don't know, I didn't touch the remote, which I'll get a text in about 30 seconds.
So you asked the question before the break. Did Roger Goodell tweak the replay system before the Super Bowl? John, you and I both have sketchy memories. Mm-hmm. So let me fill you in with what I said on Monday after the Super Bowl. When I saw and I was thinking this during the game, the Clement catch. Not necessarily the Ertz catch. We all agree, common sense, that that's a catch, okay? Although I've seen that play, not called a touchdown. But the Clement play was not a touchdown, and they gave it to him. He got with his crew and changed the rules before the Super Bowl. He beat the competition committee to the punch mm-hmm. because we saw the catch rule officiated differently in the Super Bowl than we've seen officiated all year long. So Who is coming up with this story? Who's
Nesson
doing?
Actually has a story out there. Shocking, Nesson.
Congratulations.
The New England Sports
You
Network.
Are well over 1 week behind where your boy Kamla was down here in Atlanta. I guess that just makes me a little bit smarter than those knuckleheads up there in Boston, right?
Yeah, you haven't been suspended for 5 days for anything stupid.
I don't recall anything like that happening.
No.
I don't recall them being early on stuff like I am.
Nah, they're normally not.
I called this.
Take another call. Markel's been hanging on. Markel, how you doing on Sports Radio 92.9 in the game?
I'm doing fine. How you doing, Rick and John?
Good, man.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, I think we just need a left guard, backup left guard, and we really do need a right guard, because I think Wes Schweitzer last year, he was a bad piece in the line. You know, that was the offensive line going into next year. I had good hopes for him. I just think we need to either go in the free agent and get a right guard, or go in the go in the draft and get a white guard, because I think that's one of the pieces on the offense that we do need to solidify. We need to get some of these younger guys in here so we can figure out how we gel them in into this system. And on the defense, I think we go ahead and go get the guy from Georgia, the defensive tackle. I'm not for sure what his name is, but I think that's what we should go get us a defensive tackle, and I think that's it.
Be interesting with the offensive guard. I do not think, and I like the way you're thinking, but I do not think the Falcons will go out and get a free agent offensive guard unless it's a low-dollar one. The problem is the guys that might be impact-ish type guards are going to be way too expensive. Luke Jokel's the number one guard listed, 26-year-old. He made $8 million last year. He's probably going to want 10 per. You're not paying him that. Andrew Norwell, who might be better than everybody, only made 2.7. I truly believe Carolina's going to franchise him where he'll never hit the open market. Justin Pugh, another guy, $2 million. The Giants aren't going to let him go. He's a guy that can play. Everybody else is older or just not very good. And I don't think you want to spend a ton of money on guys that are older or not very good.
I don't either. I mean, if Norwell's a bargain, which he won't be, that'd be a coup, right? But that's not going to happen. So, John, I'm reading this article, and I you know, I'm not going to take back the shade I throw on Boston. I'm not a fan of Boston. I'm just going to let that hang out there. But Mike Pereira, our guy, we interviewed him at Radio Row last year in Houston, obviously Fox Rules analyst. He says, and I'll paraphrase the paragraph here, but he says, so I think the word trickled to Goodell, and Goodell probably sat down with Alberto Riveron, the head of officiating, who has a great amount of respect, blah, 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 and just said, hey, you got to realize here, you got to make an adjustment, you're being too technical. It's just really cool, John, that I'm hearing Mike Pereira, who I really respect. I think he's fantastic at his job, making the rules relatable for the common fan and for the hardcore fan and for everybody. And for him to sort of notice that as well, because was the Corey Clement touchdown not fishy as heck?
Absolutely.
Based on how we have seen the catch rule officiated and replay reviewed all year.
We said that day via Twitter or after. I literally said, I don't know what a catch is, and it gets old, and fans get mad at it. But it did seem like Roger Goodell said, be a little more lenient here. Real quick, and a bunch of guys have texted us in saying, hey, what's the Brazilian restaurant you guys keep reading during the updates? Fogo de Chão. They say that's not how you pronounce it. According to the restaurant who sent the correct pronunciation, it's not Fogo de Chão like we have all thought for many years. It's Fogo de Chão. So Mike Conti and Grant and all of them are not nuts. This is something that comes from the restaurant. We do From the Bible next, and we have not stolen a preacher man story.
That you know of. Apparently, Ric Flair and Hulk Hogan are calling out somebody in the WWE.
Uh-oh. I love wrestling stories next. We have very well-manicured bush at our house.
Not sure Mark Owens really needed that one.
Well, the HOA.
That one really has kind of sent him over the edge.
The HOA demands it.
Well, Rick and John bring the knowledge.
You're smart.
Preacher Man brings these stories you missed. And yes, the research material.
Open up, air out.
This is From the Bible.
Hallelujah!
On Sports Radio 92.9, The Game.
All right, it's almost the Preacher Man's time to shine. I want to tell you that right around the corner, we have a cavalcade of guests. We have Knox Bardeen of 92.9thegame.com. He stops by at 1 to bicker with your boys. Graham McCauley live from Brave Spring Training at 1:20. Excited to talk baseball with Grant. And NASCAR driver Chase Elliott will be here with us at 1:40. So the 1 o'clock hour filled with great guests and great conversation.
Let's turn it over to the Preacher Man for From the Bible.
All right, From the Bible is brought to you by Dunn Waterproofing and Restoration. Get it done with Dunn. Call 770-4FLOODS, Dunn Waterproofing. So, We talked about this before the break, John Michaels. Apparently, Ric Flair has some WWE matchmaking advice for Vince McMahon. He and Hulk Hogan believe that Ronda Rousey and Charlotte should have a match ASAP.
That may be the WrestleMania match. That's kind of the one of the rumors that's out there, that Ronda Rousey would fight Ric Flair's daughter and Charlotte Flair. Makes sense. Size-wise, they look like they could match up. It looks like Asuka will maybe fight Alexa Bliss over on the other side for the women's side. Rick Hazen, look up Alexa Bliss, by the way, if you want to.
Alexa Bliss.
You might lose it for the segment.
Well, I mean, we've lost them already because we're talking about wrestling and matchmaking for WrestleMania.
Because Charlotte right now is the SmackDown Women's Champion.
That she is.
And she previously told TMC Sports, when it comes to Ronda, she knows where to find me.
There you go.
Because I'm the world champion, sucker.
Yes, you are.
She scares me. She looks like she could thoroughly kick my butt, Alexa Bliss.
She's like 5'0".
Here's the thing. I was distracted when you guys were talking wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
I just puked in my mouth.
Why?
Look at monitor 3. It's Nick Foles on the Ellen Show. The Super Bowl MVP is on the Ellen DeGeneres Show. Oh, my God. I mean, are you serious?
Like, pretty
I
get sure Fallon. Von Miller went on all of those, too.
I get Fallon and Kimmel and all that. Really? Ellen wants to talk to him?
Yeah, why
I'm
not?
Just saying. I just puked in my mouth.
There you go. All right, Preacher Man.
Well, we want to give a shout-out to Mike Vick. He is officially out of the hole. A judge has closed the books on his bankruptcy case after he has paid back $17 million to his creditors.
Now, that's bankruptcy court. Did Mike Vick ever have to pay back the Falcons, or was that allowed to just kind of go away?
That I don't know. Basically, he had to pay back Bank of America, BMW Financing, and one other that I can't find at the moment.
But he's debt-free now.
He's debt-free
good
now.
Good for him.
Oh, I mean, trust me, as a guy who racked up some credit card debt in a previous regime and had to pay it off, that feeling when it's you get that sheet of paper from the creditor and they say you're good, you want to put it in a frame on a wall like the Georgia rejection letter to Mark Owens.
Now, question, do you know how much he made in his second stint in the NFL?
Yeah, he got a $100 million contract from the Eagles, but I don't know if he played out the whole contract.
No, he made about 50. He made about half of it.
Interesting. Good for him. Being debt-free is a phenomenal feeling. Hopefully he never slides back into that again. I forget what I was going to say in terms of what's next for Vic, how he can make some cash, but he's probably got a nice little mountain of money to sit on, right?
Somebody did an interesting question. Inquiring minds want to know, why is Ellen even on in the studio? And my response was, we blame the morning show.
It's a great call.
John Fricke and Wendy are wild cards when it comes to the TV.
We have NBA TV on monitor, too. Fantastic choice. I'm really excited about that. But we do not have ESPN or NFL Network, so I'm a little buttered.
Yeah, I don't
that.
Touch the TV unless there's something I particularly want to watch. It's just,
oh, we do have ESPN over here.
Yeah, there we go. We're on
and
a
then,
roll.
And then what channel is Ellen on? Is she Fox or CBS? I don't even know.
Who knows?
I believe it's an NBC station, so it was probably on from the Olympics last night.
There you go.
I'm guessing.
Good call.
So we can blame the Bunker Show, then.
There you go.
They're the reason that Ellen is on.
With Nick Foles.
Andy, it's all on your. Jeff Benedict was on late last night. Hey, Jeff, it's your fault.
All right, yesterday we talked about Esteban Loaiza being arrested for having approximately 44 pounds of heroin / cocaine. Okay, well, more information has come out. Apparently, he was busted by the San Diego Sheriff's Department in a traffic stop.
Mm-hmm.
But a search of his car led to the discovery of a sophisticated aftermarket compartment used to conceal contraband.
Yeah. Yeah, typically if you're transporting 44 pounds, you're not just throwing it in a brown paper satchel.
All right.
And putting it in the trunk. He was a mule.
Detective Kamla is in the building. Preacher Man, I need to know one thing.
Yes.
We talk about it all the time. If you're doing nefarious stuff in your car, don't exceed the speed limit.
Don't do anything.
Was he speeding, Preacher Man?
It says minor traffic violation. So I'm assuming speeding was involved.
Or he didn't use the turn
signal.
Maybe
he had a
rolled
through
a stop sign.
I don't know.
Yeah, you have 44 pounds of heroin and coke.
Yeah.
It's a situation that I can't even fathom infinitely to deal with. And you, dude, I mean, you need to be the best driver on planet Earth
if you are running that scam. You also need to get your car inspected like it's, I don't know, like you're about to put it on the road to transport the president. There can't be anything. Like, before I leave, okay, great, you've got the secret compartment. That's awesome. Every tail light, I need an oil change. I need to make sure the tires are balanced, the tag light, that I don't have, my tints aren't too dark. Like, you need to have that thing almost factory new off the showroom before you leave with 44 pounds of yayo.
You know what happens when they find a secret compartment, right?
Yeah, they want it open.
Well, that not only that, but didn't they get a warrant for your house?
Uh-oh.
So he was renting a house since early February that was located steps away from a preschool. And that's where they found the roughly 20 kilograms of suspected cocaine.
So he's Esteban El Chapo.
Yeah. So he had 20 kilos of coke at the house.
Estimated street value. $500,000.
That's it?
I was going to say
only
$500,000.
That's what it says in the story.
Wow.
And his bail is $200,000.
How much is the heroin worth?
What's that?
How much is the heroin worth? 44 pounds of heroin. That's got to have a high street
value.
I'm
sure people in the Southern Brothers Diamond text line can fill us in on that information. Anonymously.
Yeah, if I'm LaWise,
I'm
definitely paying. I mean, the guy's got millions. I definitely would pay the bail on that.
All right, as we all know, the Winter Olympics is going on. Well, apparently, ABC station in Chicago had a little faux pas. WLS Channel 7 blames a graphic mix-up for the confusion because they referred to the Winter Olympics as P.F. Chang 2018.
Shut up. No. Instead of Pyeongchang, P.F.
Chang. P.F. Chang.
You know what? I got to fire you for that. I really do. I don't care if you got a wife and kids. I got to fire you for that. That is about as stupid as you can possibly get. Like, you know what I'm saying, John? There's a mistake. There's mistakes that you can work with, mm-hmm. and you give the guy or the girl feedback, and, you know, they got to take it home and process it and get better from it. And then there's just flat ignorance that you can't work with. Like, to me, that's ignorance I can't work with.
I'm going to tell you, a pound of heroin, why I'm sitting here doing math and trying to figure this out. According to a Google search, heroin's about $200 $200 per gram, and apparently there's 453 grams in a pound. So math that out: 453 times 200 times 44. That's how many pounds of heroin he had in the back of the compartment.
You lost me at math.
That's what I have a calculator for. So let's
you lost me at math.
453, and I'm just going to use. We'll round it up to 454. Times 200.
Very generous of you.
$90,000 per pound times 44. He had almost $4 million worth of heroin in that truck. You should have had the taillight fix and been doing the speed limit. How about you have somebody else drive it for you?
I'm just saying, man, and you get a minor traffic stop.
Right.
And how many millions?
According to my math, $3.995 million.
Well, the way heroin and coke like ruin lives and everything else in families and that, it's probably good that all that is off the market, as they say.
The other thing could be somebody snitched on him and they kind of told him, hey, he's leaving with 44 pounds of heroin.
Hmm.
You may want to make a stop.
You know, he could have been under surveillance.
Yeah, absolutely. Could have been.
I mean, you got that much weight. You know how to use that term, weight. You know, they're going to
probably. That's perfect.
So what happened to George Young and Blow? They set him up. Poor George.
I hated the way that movie ended.
It's really sad. Preacher man.
All right, we all knew the SI swimsuit issue is coming out. I believe
yes.
It's out now, as a matter
did
of fact.
Did not know that.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Our research material today is the cover model. We'll get to that in a minute. But apparently, Danny Amendola's girlfriend,
mm-hmm.
Olivia Culpo, is in
the
issue.
Yeah, we've had her as research material before.
Yeah, well, apparently she's in there sans a swimsuit.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
Is it the body paint, or is she just totally nude?
Totally nude.
Mm. Yeah, you're not seeing anything. You're just seeing, like,
so apparently the former Miss Universe of 2012 was one of the finalists for Rookie of the Year, but apparently she didn't win, so I'm not quite sure how that happened. She was in a shoot called In Her Own Words, where the models wrote meaningful words on their body.
Okay.
So there you go.
Most of us are not reading any of those words. Sorry,
no,
with all due respect.
I'm just giving credit to the story.
I'm just saying.
What you do with it after that is up to you. research material for today will be the SI swimsuit cover model. Her name is Danielle Harrington.
Yes.
Danielle Harrington. I know that John Michaels had tweeted that out earlier, and people had thanked us for it.
Yeah, somebody sent it to me, so I felt like passing it along.
Ooh.
Might be the screensaver over here. Just saying. Take a break. We come back. We go from Danielle Harrington to Knox Bardeen. Well, that's a downgrade.
That is a
we'll
downgrade.
Bicker,
oh
we'll
my
bicker
God.
With him next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
All right, time to bicker with Knox, and I got to get something off my chest. I want to know if you guys, Knox Bardeen and John Michaels, agree with me. The headline on ESPN.com's NBA page is Carmelo Anthony, LeBron James, Jimmy Butler, and Dwayne Wade smiling and drinking wine. It's a cartoon-like photo It's got Carmelo in a Thunder uniform. He's got a little glass of wine. LeBron. Jimmy Butler is actually pouring a bottle of wine into Dwayne Wade's glass. It says the NBA's secret wine society, the inside-the-bottle story of the intense love affair between NBA stars and the Gilded Grape. Huh? This is the stupidest thing I've ever seen in my life. It's offensive to me. Do you think the NBA is happy with the imagery of four of their best players drinking wine? This is really what we're talking about right now?
You'd rather have them in handcuffs sitting on a street somewhere? Of course they love the wine aspect.
All four of these guys, Jimmy Butler maybe, maybe not, are future Hall of Famers. These are not Mount Rushmore figures, but these are all-time greats we're talking about. And they got them on the front page holding wine? John, are you outraged by this?
I think it's a stupid article.
Do you think 10 and 15-year-old boys and girls should be looking at their famous favorite basketball players and talking about the NBA secret wine society? And I'm a party animal, and I am totally against this.
The problem is, though, and I get where you're coming from with that, Rick. I think it's a dumb article. The problem is, though, you see how many players that are spokesperson for this vodka, this brandy, this beer. You know, unfortunately, that's how guys make extra money.
Are guys really spokesmen for vodka and, like, while playing?
Yeah.
Some of them even make it.
Yeah.
Like, I know Amari Stoudemire had the wine baths at the end of his career. He'd literally fill a jacuzzi tub with red wine. I don't know how much that cost. I don't know. Was he dealing with the Trader Joe's, you know, $5 bottles? $2 chuck, exactly. I don't know. We can move on. Get that off my chest.
Maybe Esteban Loaiza was supplying the party supplies.
So let's bicker, man.
Okay,
what do you want to bicker about? We got all kinds of stuff in the hopper.
Well, I've given Knox a couple of things to chew on. And the first will be Falcons.
How did it taste?
It's a little meaty. A little gamey. Wow. I think it's the best way you say it. A little gamey.
Did it have a fishy vibe to it, Knox?
No,
a little too fishy.
I probably angered some people in the back because I had shrimp that I warmed up. I had shrimp and steak. So
it's not as bad as some of the fish stuff.
That's normally Mike McKenzie. But no, we were talking about the Falcons and contracts. And Mike always has fish.
Shots fired.
He does. He always has some kind of fish.
Because it's healthy.
And asparagus. Both those two together. Oh,
yeah. They're bad going in and out. We were talking Falcons contract earlier on. And guys that potentially could be cut. And a name that came up that I don't think a lot of people have spoken about is Jake Matthews. Now, Jake Matthews, they've picked up the fifth-year option for him, and it's going to pay him like $12 million. I've said that might be phone call number one that I make, even before Matt Ryan, because you know Matt Ryan's going to get done eventually. But judging by what the Falcons have done in the past, that's a June-July thing or a July-early August. That's not a March pre-free agency. Do you call Jake Matthews and say, all right, Ryan Schrader got 5 years and what was it, $31 million? Here's 5 years and $40 million. Take it or leave it.
That'd be awesome. That would be incredible if they could get that done. I think he's probably going to command a little bit more money.
Really?
But the Falcons are going to come back at him and say, we just gave Schrader this amount. I know he's the right tackle, you're the left tackle, but Schrader's been a better tackle. You need to take this. We'll pay you more because you're on the left side. We'll pay you more because your name's Matthews.
Mm-hmm.
We'll pay you more because you were drafted sixth overall, I think. But
I'm saying that contract frees up. And just say it's 5 for $40 and $8 million is the average. He's going to get some guarantees. But again, you can move that money how you want it, where instead of him counting $12 million against the cap, just say for argument's sake, he counts six. $6 million could be the difference of Dontari Poe being here or not being here.
No doubt about it. 5 years, $31.5 million. So you were dead on it, dude. And I'm with Knox, and I said this earlier. Jake Matthews, he's going to want a raise, okay? Whether the Pro Football Focus ratings of him dictates he should get a raise or not, he and his agent are going to want a raise. Period. End of story. So, but how much of a raise? I can't get him to 10, 11, 12 million per year.
No.
We talked earlier about 5 years, 40 million. And Knox kind of echoed what I was saying earlier in terms of your left tackle. Left tackles make more than right tackles. I can pay you more than Ryan Schrader. I can't double what Schrader gets and give it to you.
But here's the thing. 8 million is a huge raise. His cap number remember, he's on a rookie deal. 2.9 his first year, 3.7, 4.4, 5.2 last year. So if he goes to $8 million a year.
Do we have a deal?
Done.
Do we have a deal?
I don't even think. As a matter of fact, I'd probably try to lowball him, give him a little more than Ryan Schrader, 5 for 35.
I like that even
better. You're getting $7 million per.
Isn't this fun messing with other dudes' money?
I don't think they appreciate it. But again, it's
sure they do.
It's not like we're saying give it to us.
Well, okay. John Michaels, would you appreciate me and Knox if we were bickering and arguing and debating about whether you were going to make $50 million, $40 million, or $30
million? Yeah, I wouldn't care.
You'd be really excited about that.
Well, this is the reason why they hire an agent, right?
Yeah.
Because they don't want to go in and talk to Thomas Dimitroff about this because there's a family aspect of those two guys. That's why they say, I'm going to hire
Tom Condon,
whatever agency there's, you go in and fight my battles for me. And I think that's probably the whoever came up with that idea, good move.
He is actually represented by Ryan Williams from Athletes First. That's the agent for Jake Matthews. So that's an interesting one there. Knox, to stay on the offensive line, what do you do with Andy LaVitre? Andy LaVitre will cost you $8.375 million this year. If you get out from under his contract, Andy LaVitre has a dead number of like $1.3 million. So you would save $7 million with Andy LaVitre. Are you cutting him? Are you trying to extend him and re-sign him?
I'm a fan of getting rid of him. I'm a fan of fish and cut bait here. Only if the Falcons are going to go out and make a huge splash in free agency. I'm not saying you have to go out and get Norwell from Carolina, get the best, mm-hmm. and you don't have to go out and look at the Alex Mack, but you have to make a huge upgrade at right guard. It doesn't have to be the top guy, but it has to be a top five guy, I think. Maybe a top six or seven.
Are you trying to keep LaVitre?
No. I'm saying get rid of him and go
well,
out.
Now,
and
but
him.
Now we need two guards.
Are you saying Schweitzer's your right guard?
I think if you upgrade LaVitre, you could probably see if Schweitzer.
Oh, boy. I totally disagree with that.
Or find someone in the draft. You can't go out and pay money for two new guards.
I don't even want to go out and pay money for one new guard.
You have to make an Alex Mack-ish improvement on the offensive line.
Boy, I don't know if you make an Alex Mack. That's 10 mil per.
He was the best center, but that guy's not out there. Norwell's a pretty.
I don't think he hits the open market. I think they franchise tag him.
But listen, Alex Mack, how many Pro Bowls? Four or five? Four or five? Something like that?
It's up there, yeah.
How many Pro Bowls does Norwell have? So I'm just saying, we went out and got an accomplished guy. And I'm not saying that Norwell wouldn't come in here and be an upgrade. We went out and got a Pro Bowler. That's a splash move. To me, getting Norwell from Carolina is splash-ish, but we're going to have to pay a lot to get him, man.
It's probably going to cost $12 million to get Norwell.
That's
from
too much.
Carolina.
I can't
that's
pay.
Too much, but
bye-bye.
I'm not saying Norwell, but go down to the fifth best guard on the line.
Even Justin Pugh, who's a guy who only made like 2 million. He's looking at 10 mil per.
Right, but now you're not getting best bang for the buck. Because you got to overpay a free agent to get him to leave where he is.
You're going to overpay LaVitre to keep him, too.
Not necessarily. What if we get LaVitre to take a pay cut? Sign him to a three-year deal, roll this year up into it, and you get him at a lower number.
The easiest thing for us to do is play with other people's money and say, cut, cut, cut. These guys aren't lining up to take pay cuts.
No.
I get it. But if I'm the Falcons and I say, you could either have this or you could get virtually none of it, maybe LaVitre past the age of 30 – maybe
coming
he's,
off an injury.
Maybe he's down with the brotherhood, right? Maybe that has something to do with this. And maybe he would look at the finances of it all and go, you know what? You guys are right. Because there are rational, reasonable people on planet Earth that when an organization paints the whole picture for them, can agree to going with the flow of the organization, even if it hurts their bottom line. Adam LaVitre has been well paid for years in the NFL. If he's an idiot, he doesn't have any of that money. I don't think he's an idiot. I bet he's got a lot of his money that he's made throughout his career. And if he's listening right now, he's like, screw you, Kamla. I don't want to take a pay raise to your point. But if I'm the team, I'm like, you're on the wrong side of 30. You're a good, not great offensive lineman. Mm-hmm. This number doesn't work for us. So do you want to stay here and make a little bit less? Or do you want to hit the open market and maybe make none of it?
I think we can all agree Andy LaVitre will not be here at $8.3 million. One of the two things is going to happen. Either Rick's idea, you get him to renegotiate, and it's not taking a pay cut, it's taking a deferment on $8.3 million. Maybe you make it 3 years at 15 and 12 of it's guaranteed. Mm-hmm. Well, you're already going to pay him anyway. Okay, that number's workable. You get it in the $4-6 million range, whatever it may be, and you feel better because you save some cap space. It's either that or you go Knox's route and you just say, bye-bye. And you owe him $1.3 million, and you say, have fun on the open market.
Hearing all three of them laid out right there, I think your idea is the best in the middle. Sign him for the 2019 season, make it 15 over 2 or 14 over 2, or lower that number a bit, make some of it guaranteed so you can push the numbers aside and start averaging $5-6 million a year. Mm-hmm. I still think you go out and get a guard in free agency, though.
See, I don't think you go the free agency route. I think it is the draft route.
It takes too long to develop a guard in the draft.
Not if they're good.
Not if they're good.
So you're going to use your first round draft pick on it?
I would.
Ooh. Maybe.
Let's be honest, Knox. Where else are the needs on this team that you'd spend a first round
defensive
pick?
Line?
Okay.
That's if you don't re-sign Poe and Upshaw.
No, I think even if you do re-sign Poe, you go out and find another. You find another attacking kind of pass rusher.
See, I don't think you need another pass rusher.
Knox, there are, in terms of interior linemen, probably 10 to 15 really rock solid interior defensive linemen in this draft. There are probably 5 or 6 like high level interior offensive linemen. Do you see what I'm saying? I feel like in rounds 2, 3, and 4, you can get busy with a developmental defensive tackle. I don't want a developmental guard out of Boise State that nobody's heard of. I want one of the top guys on the list because you're just going to be able to plug in and play.
Let's talk about history. Thomas Dimitroff, even Dan Quinn, but more so on Thomas Dimitroff. Give me their positive track record with drafting offensive linemen.
And Knox, you bring up a great point, and that's why I am here with my talent evaluation to offer my services. His name is Will Hernandez of UTEP. His name is Billy Price of Ohio State. Those are the two guys that I want. Well, not on both. I want one of those two guys. And so there, I've just helped the process.
Thomas Dimitroff's track record is pretty darn good at free agency when it comes to offensive linemen. I mean, Schrader was an undrafted free agent. Mm-hmm. You had Alex Mack coming in. He was a free agent. Go out and do something you're good at. Sign on a free agent offensive lineman. You're not very good at drafting them. You're good at signing them as free agents.
And Lavitre was a trade that actually worked out pretty well. He's been a starter for a few years here, and he's been good. He's not been great, but, you know, again, unless a guard's really bad like Garrett Reynolds, you don't really hear about your guard. You know, Chris Chester, if you could get Wes Schweitzer to be Chris Chester,
absolutely,
we would be loving Wes Schweitzer, and he did get slightly better down the stretch. Just wasn't very good to begin.
Knox, let me. John and I were talking about the report that Jim McElwain is going to be signed and hired as the wide receivers coach for Jim Harbaugh up at Michigan. I think this is what's next for Michigan. I think Harbaugh in a couple of years is going to see the thing sliding down, like a home into the ocean in a mudslide scenario. The thing is just gets going the wrong way. I think he's going to realize that, hit the escape hatch, and I think Jim McElwain will be the ready-made replacement for Jim Harbaugh. Am I nuts?
Yeah, you're nuts. He's still going to be too radioactive in a couple of years from this whole, you know, I'm being threatened scam at Florida that got him fired in the first place. So that's too close for him to take over a program like Michigan. I'm kind of thinking, hey, if he does land as the receivers coach at Michigan, I want someone there to videotape coaching meetings. You guys remember before Michigan and Florida played, they were going back and forth. Won't tell us who the quarterback is. Neither will he. And they were just fighting, pillow fighting like little girls. That's what these meetings are going to be like on preparation week. So I want to see that. I want to see how those two interact.
Good thing last I checked in Ann Arbor, Michigan, no sharks. So we won't have to worry about that story.
No, because it's fresh water. The Great Lakes are fresh water. There's no sharks.
Unless you believe in Sharknado.
Well, which could happen.
I actually do believe in Sharknado.
Something else we have to bicker about. And the Solomon Brothers Diamond Text Line and our Vision Computers Twitter poll was ablaze. Kia Sorento, Nissan Xterra, SUVs, trucks or not trucks?
Wow. Those are not trucks.
Dead to me.
See, we have two Kia Sorentos, me and my wife, and I've been calling them trucks, and I got called out by my wife the other day. It's not a truck. It's an SUV. Well, what the hell's the difference? And she explained, Preacher Man helped me out earlier today. And so I am now, John's my boy, but I'm on the SUV side, not the truck
who's
side.
Who's the countryest person working on this show?
This show?
Yeah, this show.
Wow.
Go ahead. You know who it is.
Say it. It's Mark.
You know who it is.
Say it. It's fine. We all know.
That's where I looked.
So Mark Owens, who...
I like how he's trying to tiptoe around.
Right. He really didn't want to answer because he was afraid he was going to be back on Paul's list. Mark Owens, the countryest of all of us, who knows trucks better than all of us, said that his Nissan Xterra...
I have an Xterra, and I consider that a truck.
A truck has a bed. A truck has a bed that's open to the air, right, and you can put things into it.
Well, you can open up the back truck. And lay the seat down.
No. There are no seat beds in the back end of a truck.
There can be.
Yeah.
You've never really ridden a truck unless it's had a seat bed in the back.
No, most people that were used to riding a truck at my young age, there was no seat.
No,
that
you just slid around. You just held on and prayed.
Yeah. I'll say, if you've always ridden in one, somebody pulls it out of their old Buick, puts it in the back of the truck, and you're facing outward.
And you got a boombox radio back there because you can't actually hear the radio in the front of the pickup.
Vision Computer Twitter poll, we asked that question. Is it acceptable to call an SUV a truck? Yes, all good. 30%. No, no way. 70%.
Here's why. We are in the South. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of country folks, and we love y'all listening right now.
You said y'all.
I say y'all all the time. I've been saying it for years before I even lived down here. But that group of dudes and ladies, hell no. They ain't giving SUV a credit for a truck.
Neither am I.
By the way, you taking your wife to go see the new 50 Shades movie?
And Black Panther's next on our list.
Okay.
Even higher up than 50 Shades of non-nudity?
I know 50 Shades is kind of my nickname around here, but I hadn't even seen it.
Not even date night?
I just had to book tickets for Valentine's night at 10 o'clock at night.
That set you back a little?
No.
Bring a blanket.
$31 to go see 50 Shades of Grey.
Bring a blanket.
Or whatever.
You might be able to get busy underneath the blanket.
Dude, we live like two blocks from the movie theater. I think we'll be okay. Take a break. We'll come back. We'll go from Knox Bardeen to Grant McCauley. Still none of them meet Danielle Harrington, but that's okay. Grant next from spring training on Sports Radio 92.9, The Game.
I mean, just winning. I think everybody's ready to see us winning. I think we are a very young team, but we got a lot of talent on the team also. So hopefully this year is going to be different. We're going to be able to surprise a lot of people.
That is Ender Inciarte, center fielder for our Atlanta Braves. We are efforting Grant McCauley live from spring training of the Braves in Orlando. And, John, can I hit you with a Braves take?
Fire away.
I am going to give them one more year. I told Mark Owens, I'm a little salty that our Braves aren't in the fast lane and looking for a big-name third baseman, a big-name starting pitcher. I'm a little salty about that, but I'm trying to, like, be patient and be cool about it and all that kind of stuff because the season hasn't even started yet. I'm giving them one more year, John, in the slow lane. All right? You have all these prospects. You want to take a look at them. I get that. Their prospects so far, pitching-wise, have been a disappointment.
Yep.
All right? And so, to me, I give it one more year, and little Ricky's going to sit here in the Kia Studios and not freak the bleep out. Okay? One more year. But, John, if we get another year of we call up, Gohara, and he stinks. Mm-hmm. And Aaron Blair gets another chance, and he stinks. And some of the other guys, Kobe Allard and some of the guys. And if it's they get beat up. If Sean Newcomb doesn't take his game to, like, a legitimate 10-win starting basis. And, I'm telling you, like, at some point, you have to realize that our prospects would be better packaged in deals to get actual ball players who are established in this league. I'm giving the Braves one more year in the slow lane, okay? Mark Owens, do we have an agreement here? Are you okay? One more year in the slow lane.
Write this one
down,
Mark.
I'm not going to complain. I'm not going to be talking about a new manager all year. I'm giving them one more year in the slow lane. But that's all I can do. John, this has been a rebuild since the offseason of 2014.
Yeah, and there's a lot. This was supposed to be last year was really supposed to be the year. You start SunTrust Park, and you're opening the building, and this team's supposed to be better, and all these young people, and it didn't work. I didn't predict them to go. Matter of fact, I think I predicted 75 wins, and they didn't even make it there. I'm still in line the same thing. They haven't done enough in the offseason to make me think that all of a sudden it's going to be 84, 85. Maybe a 500 ball club if everything, you know, Freddie stays healthy, Dansby bounces back, Ozzie Albies becomes that guy, Ronald Acuna's pretty good. I think they could be a 500 club. Unless all of a sudden all these prospects, as you talked about pitching-wise, hit it and they hit it hard. And all of a sudden Folty becomes a 15-game winner. You get Julio Teheran to go back to where he was 2 years ago and he gets you 16, 17 wins. And all the rookies are in the 10 to 12 win range. If you get that to happen, okay, now you can be a wild card type team.
Yep.
But that's asking a lot to go right in 1 year with a bunch of young kids.
It is, dude. And you're talking about, like, Sean Newcomb was very encouraging last year. I believe it was 108 strikeouts in 100 innings. I'm a fantasy player. That's my favorite stat for pitchers. It leads to everything else. It leads to ERA, whip, and wins. I'm down with Sean Newcomb, John.
Mm-hmm.
But he gave up a .260 batting average against, which is not great, and he walked like 57 guys in 100 innings, which is awful. Okay, so even Sean Newcomb, who I like, has not put in good stuff in the stat book and not putting good stuff out on film. Maybe he's had some good starts, but the body of work so far is like I need to see a lot more, and that's really the best. Like Whistler got off to a good start, and he has been bombed ever since. So what's our rotation around? It's Julio Teheran, it's McCarthy, it's Folty, and then a couple of guys that win the jobs in spring training.
Probably Newcomb is number four.
I'll go with that.
Who knows number five?
Maybe Gohara, maybe Allard, maybe all these guys.
Maybe they go back to Whistler, maybe they go back to what's the other guy? Aaron Blair.
Right. So, John, is we were talking with Grant, I believe it was last week, And all I'm saying, I'm not saying that the Braves definitively have the worst starting rotation in baseball. They might have a good rotation, but they might have the worst starting rotation in baseball. Okay, we'll see how it plays out. Julio, tell me if you agree. Julio Teheran has a question mark next to his name right
Absolutely.
Now. Brandon McCarthy has a bigger question mark next to his name.
Sure.
Does Fulton Evich still have a question mark next to his name?
Yeah, if you would have asked that in August, no. Fulte looked like the guy. He finished 8-10 with a 4.19 ERA.
Does Newcomb still have a question mark next to his name? And then the fifth spot in the rotation is a question mark. I'm just saying. I'm cheering for him. I want him to win. I want Teheran to be 17 wins and all the stuff that you just said. I'm a Braves fan. Like, not from birth, but I'm a Braves fan. I'm here 10 years, man. I'm in this. I've been to Braves games with my boys. I cheer for the Braves. It's been very difficult the last two or three years. Matter of fact, you can't cheer for the Braves over the last two or three years. It hasn't been a relevant team. It hasn't been competitive. I'm ready to cheer for a competitive, relevant team, John. But we have question marks at all five spots in our rotation. You know how many teams in Major League Baseball have question marks at all five spots? It's a hand,
maybe.
It's a handful.
Eight, maybe.
I don't even think it's that many. Because there's, like, the San Diego Padres probably have, they do. They have my guy, Dinelson Lamet. It's Dinelson Lamet.
Sure.
He's a flamethrower, okay? And he does have a question mark by his name, but I feel very good about his future. My point is, we have I think, the most question mark-filled starting rotation in Major League Baseball.
Here's the other thing. When you go back and you look at the lineup, there's questions in the lineup as well. Ender is a rock star leading off and playing in the outfield. Can steal bases, can get on base. You know, he's not going to hit for a lot of power. That's not what he's here for. Steal some bases. Ozzie Albies looks like a guy that's going to be a rock star in the number two hole. Again, get on base, run. You've got a great speed element at the top of the line. And Freddie's a star. I mean, people can hate on Freddie Freeman all they want. Freddie Freeman's a star in this league. But what do you have after that? Where's 4 through 8? Who's hitting where? Okay, you have an idea who the guys are. Let's just say Tyler Flowers. Is that your cleanup hitter, or is Nick Markakis your cleanup hitter?
No, I mean, well, and don't even get me started on Markakis in the middle of a lineup. I mean, come on, man.
That's what you're looking
at. No, I totally get it. But I'm saying, if you want to be competitive at all, you know that Nick Markakis as a cleanup hitter or a five-hole hitter is terrible. He's not a run producer. You know what I'm saying? That's like putting a center at point guard in the NBA.
Yeah.
It's just a total miscast. Now, if our offense is sort of that weak, then you got to do what you got to do. I mean, you want a veteran bat in the middle of your lineup. But Nick Markakis, in terms of offensive production, is one of the very worst outfielders in baseball. Now, you know, clubhouse guy, solid guy, like the back of the baseball card looks really good, okay? But the years with the Braves here, John, what is it, 5, 7, 8 home runs? That's awful.
Yeah.
What is it, 60, 70, 75 RBI over like 500-plus at bats?
That should be hitting 7.
That's awful.
Last year he was 275 with 8 homers and 76 RBI. The year before that, 269, 13, and 89.
So how many at bats did he have last year?
593.
Oh my.
He was 275 with 8 homers and 76 RBI. The year before that, 269, 13, and 89.
So how many at bats did he have last year?
593.
Oh my God. He had 593 at bats. And hit 8 homers.
Yep.
And had 75 RBIs.
That is what he had.
Am I the only one that sees a problem with that?
There's a big problem. And that's why you're hoping, again, that some of the younger guys get up and get a chance. And you hope Ronald Acuna becomes a 30-30 guy. And you can plug him into the middle of the line. But you can't do that day one. Maybe you should. But we've seen also the tracker record with the way that they brought guys along. They're in no hurry to rush a guy to a spot they don't feel like he's ready for.
Would you consider, I'm starting my fantasy baseball rankings for Grant McCauley's league. Dansby Swanson is a sleeper on my list, John, but he's not a guy that I have to have. There are other sleepers, like Tim Anderson with the Chicago White Sox, is a sleeper that I like more than Dansby Swanson. And based on where I was with Dansby a year ago, I can't believe I just said that.
Dansby was a must draft for people
Absolutely.
A year ago. This year, you're in a standard 10. He probably doesn't get drafted. You're in a 16-teamer. All right, he's a depth guy. You keep him. But when you hit in the 240 range, like he did a year ago, matter of fact, what did he hit? 232. I was being generous with 2. He hit 232 with 6 homer and 51 RBI. That's pathetic, to be honest with you. And he's probably going to be your 7 or 8 hole hitter.
Graham McCauley has a 12-team fantasy baseball league. The top half of said league is very competitive. Mm-hmm. The bottom half last year was excruciatingly uncompetitive.
I think it'll be more competitive this year.
I certainly hope so. And it's nothing on Grant. It's on some of the people that agreed to join the league and mm-hmm. then quit immediately.
I mean, let's be honest. My college football fantasy league was the same way. The tops, the bottom four were really uncompetitive.
I disagree,
well,
my
at least
bro.
The bottom two.
The bottom two. Well, the bottom two we had like five or six bow outs in Grant's league. Like the bottom half of the league checked out.
You know what it is? Baseball becomes a grind. And I told y'all last year, I said, if I'm a month into it and I'm done, you got an easy win.
Yeah, you're too competitive for that. Well, I told you, you're not going to let your team fall into disrepair like that.
Well, the problem is my team was good, and I didn't. So I kept making moves, and I made it all the way to the semis.
Oh, man, it is feisty in the Kia Studios when it comes to fantasy. I literally can't wait for fantasy baseball. Can't wait for extra innings on DirecTV, you know, watching Colorado Rockies games in the 4 o'clock window. I'm stoked. I'm really excited for baseball.
So let me ask you this. It's February 13th. Pitchers and catchers have just reported.
Mm-hmm.
Grant McCauley is probably down there, you know, playing pepper or hitting fungos.
He's got a microphone in somebody's face.
Yeah, and Grant goes down there and works. Like we joke around with Grant, but Grant is a hard working dude. How many wins do the Braves have? Assuming they don't make another move.
Mm-hmm. How many did they have last year?
72, 73, something like that. Boy, you're taking over under that. If I say 75 is the over under, you're going over or under?
I'm going to take the under.
Me too.
I'm going to take the under. Last year, you remember I had a little bit of enthusiasm and optimism.
Yeah,
they
were 72 and 90 a year ago.
There were 72?
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be right about there, dude.
Yeah.
They're going to be right about that number. I want a lot of people and play radio. Because last year, I wasn't playing radio. I actually thought Dansby and this and this and this.
Didn't you have a fringe wild card?
Well, I did. I called them wild card-ish. I thought they'd win maybe 83 games. And I think I was 11 off. But they didn't do enough to improve the team, John. It's really the same cast of characters, and we're hoping that these prospects work out.
Hey, Mark, can you get me 14 box seats for opening day?
Just 14?
Just 14.
Yeah, no problem.
It's me and 13 of my closest friends.
What do you need?
I need 20, actually.
22. So yeah. 34. Preacher, man, how many are you getting?
I need 15.
Done.
So we need a section. Well, can you just hook us up with a section?
Yeah, just go on to Will Call.
Can I take batting practice as well and maybe throw out the first pitch?
Depending on spring training does, you want to play something?
Hold on. Can he race the freeze?
You want to race freeze?
Hell no.
Make sure you get nice and drunk beforehand.
That's the one thing.
Yeah, so he can pull a hammy or whatever else he's going
to
break.
I'll be honest. That's the one thing I don't want is to race the freeze. Hey, what I do want is to hang out with Dukes and Bell. This Friday, they'll be at Twin Peaks in Kennesaw, broadcasting live from 2 to 7. So hang out with Mike and Carl at Twin Peaks in Kennesaw. We'll be hanging out with Chase Elliott next. There's no read between the lines, but we're going to ask NASCAR driver some questions about Daytona. And I'm going to ask him, is an SUV a truck?
Here comes Chase Elliott with a big run off two. He's going to do it again. Back-to-back wins. Chase Elliott wins at his first try at Darlington.
Jim, start your engines. I say my car
goes. And we're back in the Kia Studios with you, Rick Kamla and John Michaels, throwing our midday party. And joining it right now is one of the best drivers on planet Earth. He is way better than me. I have a terrible reputation as a driver. His name is Chase Elliott, driver of the number 9 Chevy for Hendrick Motorsports. Chase, Rick Kamla, John Michaels, we welcome you to Atlanta. How you doing?
Doing good, guys. Thanks for having me.
Chase, before we get into the NASCAR conversation, obviously with Daytona coming up, we were having a conversation in here, a philosophical debate. We all have SUVs here. Are SUVs trucks, or are they just in their own category of SUV?
No, definitely in their own category, for sure.
I knew it. I told Mark Owens, I go, Chase Elliott, he's going to be all technical about the vehicle, and he's going to say that an SUV is not a truck. So you nailed it, Chase.
Yeah, definitely not, man. That's one thing. People call them a truck, and a truck's its own animal.
So, Chase, what do you drive? Like, when you're picking up the kids at the soccer game, or you're going, to get some fried chicken from the grocery store. What do you drive around in?
Well, I'm not picking up any kids at a soccer game, so let's be clear on that. but I actually do have an SUV. I have a Chevy Tahoe, so
nice.
I like it a lot.
Chase Elliott with us here on the WadeFord.com hotline. He's just shot down my hopes and dreams that my SUV was actually a truck. All right, Daytona 500 this weekend. It's the Super Bowl of NASCAR in week number one. Does that make it easier to get ramped up to be ready to race coming off an off season?
It's a big race for sure. You know, obviously our whole season is ahead. So, you know, the Super Bowl means a championship. So it's not necessarily a championship, but it's a huge event. a massive way to start our season and such a historic race. So we'd love to have a great run. I think we have a good car and just hope that circumstances fall our way and we'll see how the day unfolds.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Chase Elliott joining here, Rick and John on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. I like what you said right there. It's not a championship because that, of course, happens at the end of the year, but it kind of feels like one, Chase. Like, is it not transcending for a driver if he or she wins the Daytona 500?
It's huge. I mean, for sure. I mean, that race speaks for itself, you know. But like I said, it's not a championship. You know, if we can't hand out the championship trophy on week one, but it's a huge event. It's an event that everyone wants to win. It's hard to compare it to other sports because it is our first event of the year. But it's a great way to start it, like I said, and I'm very honored to be a part of it.
Chase, a lot of the early predictions have you to be one of the breakout drivers in NASCAR this year. What are your realistic goals for 2018?
I think the biggest thing we need to do is try to find victory lane. You know, at the end of the day, we've had a lot of great pieces to the puzzle. We just haven't had that piece, and I think we have what it takes to do it. We just have to make it happen and put in the right pieces at the right time to go and do it. So. We'll see.
Yeah, you got the rest of your life to pick up kids at soccer games, man. Chase, don't burden yourself with that right now. Chase Elliott hanging out with Rick and John. So, Chase, you transitioned from the number 24 to the number 9 to honor your dad, Bill Elliott. How was that conversation with the team and your dad?
Yeah, the conversation kind of came about over a longer period of time. It wasn't necessarily something that happened right off, overnight. It kind of came about over the course of a handful of months, and it was an easy answer for me. Obviously, I'd love to be that number. Just glad it worked out like it did. It fits me, and it fits my past, and I'm excited to carry it forward.
Hey, Chase, Mark Owens, quick question about, speaking of your car and your team, Napa Auto Parts just announced a 2-year extension with your ride. How much pressure does that put on you? Because a lot of teams nowadays, they're struggling to find full-season rides. Napa comes in and says, not only are we with you, we're going to give you another 2 years. Expectations have got to be good from them this year. Is it a little more pressure on you this season?
Well, I think they're just showing their commitment to me, and they've been that way, and frankly, they've been that way throughout their entire involvement with my racing career. They've been very committed, very involved, very willing to help in any way they can. So it's been a great partnership, been huge for me, and I love having them on board, so I'm excited to carry their colors forward along with number 9, and looking forward to see where we end up.
Hey, Chase, how do you like the new Camaro you're driving?
Looks great, man. I'm excited to see how it runs and we get into some of these races and get down the road. But it's a great-looking vehicle. Looks just like the Camaro we see on the road. And commend Chevrolet for their efforts in making that happen.
Chase, one of the things that we always talk about, whether it's football, baseball, basketball, is guys in the off season. It's no longer an off season. It's 12 months out of the year, getting prepared to get to the next season, getting better during the time down. What did you do in the off season trying to get yourself better? Did you have any time to take a vacation and kind of relax?
Yeah, I did. I got to take a couple of really cool trips. Also spent some time in the shop, and we had a couple test sessions to go do. So, like you said, it's there's not much of an off season. Keeps us busy, which we all sign up for it, and I enjoy doing it. So the season's here now for sure, and I think everybody's ready to get down the road and see what 2018 has to offer.
So on your new team, on the Hendrick Motorsports team, you got Alex Bowman, you've also got William Byron, yourself, and Grandpa, Uncle Jimmy Johnson. Are you going to be leaning on him a lot as he's going to be the veteran of the team, Hendrick?
Yeah, I've always leaned on Jimmy, so nothing's really going to change from that perspective. I think we'll all lean on each other. Alex and William coming in, they might have some different views and do things differently than the way I do or the way Jimmy does it. So always something to be learned. So, yeah, I think we'll all lean on each other for sure.
Chase Elliott joining the Midday Show with Rick and John here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. All right, Chase, so you've got a big race coming up. It's race day. To get yourself pumped up and fired up, what do you listen to? A little heavy metal? You're rocking some country? What are you listening to get fired up?
Oh, man, big Eric Church fan, so love his music. I don't really have to go a whole lot further than that. He's a man, but our days are pretty busy on race day, so not a whole lot of time to listen to music in general, unfortunately.
What is a typical race day? Because we see you guys when you're out on the track and getting ready to run. What leads you up to the time that they drop the flag?
A lot of obligations, a lot of team meetings, and lunch, and there I hope at some point. So, we do a pretty good job of just trying to separate our race day mornings and doing the things we have to do for partners, and then making time for the team and then myself. So everybody's got their own way of doing it, but my team does a pretty good job of making sure that I have the time I need to prepare.
Chase, as you continue to grow in the sport and become more of a fan favorite and a popular driver, has anything, any expectations, anything taken you back a little bit that you weren't quite prepared for? As you kind of become an elite driver, you're not just one of the guys in the top 40, you're a top 10 driver now. Has anything surprised you a little bit as you grow in popularity?
Well, I think you're always facing new situations, right? So, as you get in those spots that you haven't seen before, you're going to have to figure out how to face them and work through them. So, you're always learning and you're always trying to figure out what's next, and figure out how to turn a bad day in the past, change the outcome into a good one. So there's always something to be learned, and we're just looking forward to more opportunities and more chances.
Chase, we really appreciate you coming on. Best of luck this upcoming season. Best of luck at the Daytona.
Thanks. Have a good one.
Thanks a lot. Chase Elliott, our guest here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We'll take a break.
Is this Eric Church?
Yes, sir.
Eric Church. This is your boy, John.
Yeah.
I mean, good for Chase Elliott. And good for Mark Owens.
This actually,
I didn't know who Eric Church was.
I was playing on Shuffle the other day. It went from NWA to Tribe Called Quest to Eric Church. I don't know how
that happened.
And then Keith Sweat. Take a break. We come back. We'll wrap things up. We'll tell you what we want to redo next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
The Bunker Mentality.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.